We are back and we are bad. And these are the stories I think that you should know about today. So a reporter asks an EU, European Union spokesperson, a perfectly fair question, and he gets fired for asking the question about that freedom of speech thing that they brag about over there. Oops. The Viktor Orban show hits the White House, and the world may be better off for it. He gets everything that he asked for, and then some. And by the way, that's not making Volodymyr Zelensky very happy. He's an angry dude today. Speaking of Zelensky, things are really bad for him right now, but even worse for Ukraine's army, surrendering, and its people. No electricity, no heat. I'm wondering if things are starting to near the end here. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I want to start the show with a wonderful document. It's one of the best documents in history, right there, like with the Magna Carta and others. It's the U.S. Constitution. It's an amazing contract which guarantees for the people of the United States, where it pretty much actually tells them what we in the government will do, what we in the government can't do, and what we cannot do. It defines, for example, this thing called inalienable rights. I know, it's a long, weird word, inalienable, right? So what is inalienable rights? These are the things that they, the government, have no business messing with. They're like saying, these are things you're on your own with. We have nothing to do with this. We're not going to give you this. We're not going to take this away from you, right? Because those things do not come from man. They don't come from the government, the Constitution says. They come from God. God gives us these things. So the government can't interfere in them, right? Pretty cool concept, right? It's smart. And what are these things? It's a lot of them. But the main ones are your right to liberty, to feel free, your right to be secure, right? To have a sense of security about your life. And most of all, the most important thing in this document, they put it right at the very top, your right to think and express yourself freely. Nobody tells you what you have to think or what you have to say. Now, those of us who come from the West, myself included, as an American, right? I've always thought, man, free speech, greatest thing in the world, our domain. I'm so proud that I'm American because, or a Westerner, because those are the things that we're so good at. Today, I'm here to say, maybe not so much. Maybe that's no longer the case. In fact, in the West, more than in other parts of the world, speech these days is kind of repressed. Look at what just happened in the European Union. This is a perfect case study because it calls into doubt the credibility of the EU, and it points out an obvious hypocrisy. Here's what happens. Some reporter, an Italian dude, asks what I think is a very good question. And for asking that question, he's sacked. He's fired. He loses his job. Gabriele Nunziati. It's fun to say. He just lost his job, lost his livelihood for simply asking this question right here. Listen, watch.
You have been repeating several times that Russia should repay for the reconstruction of Ukraine. Do you believe Israel should repay for the reconstruction of Gaza, since they have destroyed almost all the strip and the civilian infrastructures?
If you're going to make one pay, why not make the other one pay, right? Perfectly legit, decent question, like it or not, deserves an answer. Now I want you to listen to the non-answer that he got, because it's not a denial. They don't even give him a thank you, we'll consider it, we'll get back to you. No. It's more like a priggish, how dare you ask that question kind of non-response.
It's definitely an interesting question on which I would not have any comment at this stage.
It's a question I'm not going to respond to. Who the hell are you, Mrs. Furry Hair? I mean, how do you do that? And look at yourself in the mirror. Nunziati was fired for simply asking her that question. But when people heard of it, they started asking questions. Like, what does this say about the EU that the guy asks a question and gets sacked? And how much control do they have? And did the EU make this guy's boss at Nova Media fire him for asking that question? And why do they go around lecturing the world about free speech if they're not even going to uphold it or defend it themselves? Those are all good questions. So they brought them to the EU, right? And I'm going to show you now how they responded to that. Did the EU address it? Here's their answer.
The European Commission attaches the utmost importance to freedom of the press. We demonstrate that commitment on a daily basis here in this press room, here at our midday press briefing. In relation to the case in question, the Commission has not been in contact with the media concerned. Questions on this specific decision should be addressed to that media.
No, you don't. You just showed you don't respect it. If you respected it, you would deal with this question about this poor guy who was fired for asking a question. You're lying. Again, denial, non-response, not even a show of concern. Like, oh my God, we feel bad about this guy. You know, he can't feed his family because he asked a question. No, none of that. And you know why? They act that way because I am convinced it was their doing. They think they walk on water over there. And they had this guy removed. Again, this is the organization that goes around the world lecturing countries like China and Russia and Iran, and as well as other countries, including countries they have invaded or had a part in the invasion, Iraq, Afghanistan, Serbia. They go to these countries and they lecture them about the importance of free speech. But they fail to uphold it themselves. As for Gabriele Nunziati, it is fun to say his name. I'm going to reach out to him. Our team is going to try and see if we can get a hold of him. I want to have him here. I want to ask him some questions. I want him on this show because that's a good story that I want him to share with the world. Because this guy's been punished unfairly. And I'm a journalist. He's a journalist. It's my duty to defend him. Even though, by the way, he did nothing wrong. I want to talk about Prime Minister Viktor Orban now. He may represent what amounts to really a small country in Europe, 8 million people or something like that. But he seems to have this oversized influence these days, this guy. And maybe that's a good thing. You see, here's why. For decades, the United States has treated leaders like from the UK and France and Germany, like those are the important countries. Those are the people, they do walk on water. While they've given short shrift to the Eastern European countries. Not this White House, not the Trump White House. At this White House, Prime Minister Viktor Orban sits around with the president, takes questions from reporters, delivers pronouncements about world events, like he's a prophet or an important elder. And here's, listen, watch this. Here's President Trump demurring to the prime minister on the issue of whether Ukraine has any kind of chance to win their war against Russia.
So the only pro-peace government is the United States government and the small Hungary in Europe anyway. All the other governments prefer to continue the war because many of them think that Ukraine can win on the front line, which is a misunderstanding of the situation. So it's a complicated issue. We will discuss it. It requests not just 2 minutes to respond to your question, but rather than our lecture. Sorry, not to continue more than that.
To both of you.
So you would say that Ukraine cannot win that war?
You know, miracle can happen.
Yeah, that's right.
What did he say? Only a miracle? Look, the thing with Orban is he's not a Russophobe, which I guess makes him a bad European. He basically maintains what appears to be a pragmatic, transactional relationship, like a business relationship with President Vladimir Putin, while his Western European colleagues all harbor an really irrational and hateful relationship toward Putin. For example, this is the perfect example to make my point. Orban thinks it would be smart, and is smart, to buy efficient, inexpensive Russian oil and gas for his citizens so they don't have to pay so much. So he asked for a waiver. He asked Mr. Trump, while he was there at the White House, for a waiver of the sanctions. President Trump said, okay, that makes sense.
The first and most important thing is that we have managed to defend the cuts, so Hungary will continue to have the lowest energy prices in Europe. We have been granted full exemption from sanctions in the case of the Turk Stream and the Druzhba pipeline. There are no sanctions that would limit the supply from there to Hungary or make it more expensive.
Here's the thing about this, the getting down to brass tacks, as we like to say. Russia, because it's so big and it's got so many resources, is capable of providing all of Europe, India, all of China with oil and gas if it wanted to. And when it comes to energy, Russia's like, they're like the Mac Daddy, right? But this weekend, Russia proved that it can giveth, but it can also taketh away. After delivering what most military analysts refer to as a fatal blow to the Ukrainian military in the city of Pokrovsk, Russia chose another target over the weekend, Ukraine's energy grid. You see, for the past month, Ukraine, and we should put this on the table first, Ukraine has been hitting Russia's refineries and energy plants on a near weekly basis. And oftentimes it would knock power out to thousands of Russian consumers for a day or two. This weekend, with incredible ferocity, Russia fired back. They answered back, and they did it big. They went big. Russia hit every major working power plant in Ukraine that disperses energy, heat, or water supplies with drones, medium, and long-range missiles. The impact was so severe that, according to Ukraine's own energy office, the country's capacity to generate power was reduced to zero. Here is how one popular YouTuber described the assault as it was happening.
Kiev is in the dark. The lights are out. As you can see in some of the images here, the damage done by Russia in this overnight attack, they have halted all thermal plants inside of Ukraine. And even if they do get things back up online, all Russia has to do is just hit this one other spot, and they're done.
For Zelensky, the situation is looking bleaker by the minute. If you are a supporter of Zelensky, this is a time to, I don't know, pray for the guy or something, or send him your thoughts, because it's not good. It's not good. His response, by the way, so far in the middle of all this, a selfie statement using his phone, where he released what seemed to be like, I don't know, I write and I speak for a living. This seems to me like it's a bit of a rambling message where, on the one hand, and I listened to it many times, he minimizes the damage that Russia has done, but then he seems to make like a statement where he's almost saying, well, it's not really that bad. He also then says his military and his civil officials have the situation under control, but then he seems to be asking the Europeans for more help. And on top of his wish list, by the way, what he wants most is to punish Russia. He wants more sanctions to destroy Russia. Here it is.
Restoration efforts continue after last night's strike. It was a very flagrant and largely demonstrative strike. We need many sanctions, a lot of pressure, so that Russia doesn't have the means to exist under war conditions. Over the course of the night, Ukraine's defense forces neutralized more than 400 drones, which is a significant result achieved by our unmanned systems units, army aviation, and mobile fire groups. Electronic warfare did its job. The main targets of this strike were our cities, our energy sector, our people. We must rebuild as quickly as possible the electricity, water, and heating supply in those cities where there was damage.
Did he just say it's largely demonstrative? That means it was just for show, there was no damage done? See what I mean? It's kind of conflictive, the statement. I'm not sure what he's trying to say. Either they hit you and it hurts, or it was nothing. Here's the bad news for Zelensky. First, Trump's alliance with Orbán and the anti-Ukraine comments that came out of the White House over the weekend, that does not bode well for him, right? Obviously. Why? Well, it diminishes his influence with the EU leaders who are looking to the White House for leadership, and it makes his talk of joining NATO seemed like yesterday's news. Worst of all for Zelensky is the fact that his army is not only losing the war, but according to all credible reports, it's losing bad or badly, right? Adjective, adverb. The news from the front is not good. And that makes Zelensky a bad risk, both for Washington and begrudgingly even for the elitist leaders of Western Europe. Perhaps the worst damage for Zelensky is coming from his own soldiers, though. See, they seem to be surrendering right now in droves. And what they're saying paints a picture of the Ukrainian military that seems desperate, incapable, and even kind of like in disarray.
They said that we would come in for a couple of days to support them until the reserves were tightened. Then they told us on the spot that it would be for about a month, and in the end, we had already been sitting for more than a month and people were dying around us. I realized we couldn't get out of there. There were a lot of drones flying. They were always sitting in the basement, and we just heard that those who were killed were hit with drones or artillery.
One always has to look at these interviews, and I know if you're thinking this, I don't blame you. I think the same thing. I know what you're thinking. Yeah, well, Rick, you're showing me some guy who was captured. He's incentivized to say whatever they want him to say. I get it, of course. You know, he wants to eat, right? So you're going to look at these things with some degree of skepticism, and I'll grant you that, and I'll say, look, judge for yourself. I'm just showing it to you. I will give you this one caveat, though. What they're saying lines up with past reports. And they also line up. I read military analysts almost every day. And this, what they're saying, for me anyway, I don't want to put words or thoughts in your head, lines up with what I hear military analysts saying as well. Here's some more.
Our position was destroyed. Many died, probably hundreds. If any squad went out to hold some position, they almost never returned. Then they recruited people again and put them in the same positions again. A lot of FPV drones. On the way, many did not reach us. They simply shelled our forces on the way. When you arrive at any position, there are either wounded or dead.
We were told that we had no losses at all. Everything was fine. Don't be afraid, go. Everything is fine. When I came out and looked out of the basement, everything was littered with corpses, many dead soldiers. After I reported that I had hounded man with me, I saw that drones were flying at us from the side of our units. As I understand it, they wanted to finish us so they wouldn't have to bring us out because the rescue operation was very difficult.
You know, that one guy there looks like a young buck. But the other two guys, they look a little old, a little long in the tooth to me. I don't know. What do you think? One other thing on this topic. You know the government shutdown that I've been telling you so much about that in the United States that's been preventing the government of the United States from paying, you know, government workers and even keeping more than a million soldiers, 1.3 to be exact, 1.3 million soldiers from getting their paychecks. It's also affecting weapons and supplies that would have been sent to Ukraine under previous arrangements. So because of this government shutdown that's now taking place in the United States, Kiev will simply have to do without. Man, you know the expression, when it rains, it pours? It's pouring. So when we come back, we're going to be joined by one of my heroes in American politics, Dennis Kucinich. Boy, there's not a lot of honest guys who are truth tellers in U.S. politics, either in the Senate or in the Congress. I'm sorry, there just isn't. This guy was. U.S. Congressman, former Ohio mayor, and I can't wait to talk to him, so stay right there, because it's going to be good. Oh, my God, this is going to be great. Dennis Kucinich, former Democratic U.S. Congressman, former Mayo of did I say Mayo? Like mayonnaise, former mayor in Ohio, of Cleveland, right? Was it Cleveland? Dennis, was it Cleveland, Mr. Congressman?
You bet. Cleveland, Ohio.
That's what I thought. You know, my son's there now. Remington is, he loves it. He went to school at the University of Toledo, and he's never looked back. I mean, he was homesick the first week, but Dad, this is the greatest place in the world. He just loves being in the Midwest. I went to school in Minnesota. I talked him into going there, and he's loving it. Ohio's a beautiful place with beautiful people.
It is, Rick. And good luck to your son there. It's a great place to go to school.
So how are you, my friend? You look fantastic. You don't change. What's wrong with you?
I try to stay in good shape and, you know, just part of the way I live, that's all.
Here's really the real interesting question for you, right? Because you and I have known each other for a long time, and, you know, I loved you before and I love you still, and I think you're a man of honor, and that makes you really weird because you're a politician. I mean, you and I go back to my days at CNN and NBC and Fox and everything else, and even when I was doing some work at RT, and I used to see you in Misha's office up there at in Washington. But one of the things that perplexes me about you is that you've always been a politician because you started as a mayor, et cetera, et cetera. Usually guys like you, who I've known, who were like city councilmen and then politicians, they got corrupted. They get corrupted early. You never did. You've always stayed true and honest. What the hell's wrong with you?
Well, you know, let's put it this way. I think there are a number of people in politics who are in there for the right reason. For myself, I don't have a hole in my soul that I need to fill with money or any kind of honors. The honor is in serving itself. And there's unfortunately opportunities in public life for people who are looking for emoluments, aggrandizements, money, other opportunities after they leave. I mean, that's the way they live. I chose a different course. That's just the way I was brought up. It's where I was educated. That's my spiritual education. So to me, it's enough to serve. Beyond that, one should not be looking for anything other than what someone is actually paid in the for the office in which one serves.
Yeah, and, you know, some of the positions you've taken throughout the years since I've been following you are courageous. I mean, it would have, I guarantee you, when it came to the Iraq vote, for example, where you were one of those guys who said, no, this is stupid. What the hell are we doing? This is nutty. We've got to stop starting wars with these countries unnecessarily. And yet you held your ground. I imagine somebody would have thrown a few bucks at anybody else and they would have taken it.
Well, let's talk about Iraq because I don't think it's discussed enough. I knew back in after 9/11 when there was talk about going after Iraq that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, with Al-Qaeda's role in 9/11. Mm-hmm. Iraq didn't have the intention or capability of attacking America. I've told hundreds of members of Congress this. I shared a research paper that I had done. Didn't matter. Congress voted to go to war. And over 1 million Iraqis died and about 5,000 American men and women who love their country and serve their country died.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, increasingly, Rick, war is illegitimate. It should never be fought. While I believe that America has the ability to defend itself, we blurred the lines between offense and defense. You know, I was a third-string quarterback and a not very good football team, and I knew the difference between offense and defense.
Yeah.
And our government doesn't know that difference. We're going on the offense around the world. And so I voted against that. I vote against it. I think it's time to change America's foreign policy so that we put away the saber and we start to work cooperatively with other nations.
Doesn't it come down to, okay, I'm being told we need to go to war with, name your country, Syria, Libya, Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, whatever.
Venezuela,
yeah, the newest one. And here's the question, that if I was a congressman in the United States Congress or a senator in the United States Senate, I would ask myself, how in the hell Does this action that I'm about to approve of improve the life of John Doe in Columbus, Ohio? How? How is he affected by Venezuela, Libya, Syria, Iraq, whatever, name your country? And I find that the vast majority of the times I can't come up with an answer to that question. So where do they get it?
War never does. And, you know, we have to move away from the World War II model, which has been shifted into current politics. We're not defending America when we attack, when we threaten to attack Venezuela. We weren't defending America when we attacked Iraq. We're not defending America when we attacked Iran. We're not defending America when we attack Russia. This is about an arms accentuated budget. Over 56% of our discretionary spending goes for the Pentagon, for war. We have to change the way, we have to change our priorities in America. We have people who are hungry, people who don't have decent health care, people who don't have a roof over their head or a decent one, children who aren't getting a good education. And we're pouring money in anticipation of the next war. We just restarted nuclear weapons testing. And while the START treaty is ready to expire in February, and this is a serious matter which sets the stage for a nuclear conflict, you know, we're losing the idea of what it means to be a nation. And you started to talk about it right at the beginning about basic freedoms. And, you know, it's not to be in a continual state of warfare. It's not to be spending the treasure of the nation on arms. It is not to be trying to tell other nations how they should govern. It's to take care of your own people here at home and to make sure that they have jobs, a decent health care, education, a roof over their heads, food on the table. I mean, that's what a government ought to be about.
Yeah.
Instead of some a Leviathan.
So make here, you're in such a unique position right now. No, I should say we are blessed to have you. We are in a unique position. I offer you my audience. My audience is tens of millions of people watching all over the world. They would like to understand from an actual U.S. congressperson, what happens? Why do all of your colleagues get sucked in and do the unthinkable? Why do they all vote in mass for these stupid wars and not give the people the livelihood they deserve? Can you make us understand that? How does that happen?
Sure. I think most people go to Congress, House or Senate with the intention of doing good. However, once you get in there, there's all these interest groups that intervene between the government and the people who elected them. I mean, a good example is what's happened in Gaza. The Israel lobby has intervened, and you end up with Netanyahu getting 50 standing ovations from the Congress not too long ago. While at the same time, America has looked the other way while genocide is being committed in Gaza.
Yes.
You know, you have to call it what it is. Now, what does that mean? That means that in order to free itself from this foreign entanglement, America has to change its relationship with Israel. Israel cannot have a blank check. We cannot permit them to commit genocide, and with our tax dollars nonetheless. And we need to restructure our foreign policy with every country. And we need to stop this aggressive intent to try to subjugate other nations, put them under our thumb. It's wrong. We are not a nation above nations anymore. The world has changed. It's multipolar. We need to remember that being a nation among nations is where we can meet the needs of our people and have good relations with other countries. I don't have a airy-fairy view of this, Rick. I understand that there are bad people around the world, but we shouldn't be one of them. We must stop this aggressive conduct. Where we put the mailed fist out there every time there's a disagreement with another country.
You know, it's funny. Eisenhower warned us against the military-industrial complex, and then we ended up with the president of the United States. His name was Dick Cheney, and yes, he was the president of the United States, who literally took that military-industrial complex and brought it into the Oval Office and said, we now make decisions in the United States as to what we do or don't do from a defense standpoint. My thinking is, ever since Cheney did that, and you were his biggest nemesis, by the way, thank you for that, we've never looked back. It's only continued or gotten worse.
Well, you know, as far as Dick Cheney, he was very competent. He understood how government worked. I disagreed with him vehemently on his policies with respect to Iraq. And I think that one can simultaneously oppose someone on the policy, but understand how effective they might be. There's no question that Dick Cheney had enormous influence as vice president, probably more influence than most vice presidents. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the broader U.S. foreign policy, which is what you have to look at, whether it's a Democrat or Republican in office, we still have overreached. I watched the interview with the Ukrainian soldiers. It's heartbreaking to see how so many young men and not so young men have been thrown into this maw of a dirty war that is unwinnable for Ukraine. There's no way they can win that war. Mm. And they've sacrificed hundreds of thousands of the flower of their nation. And the West, Europe and the United States for quite a while, push to keep the war going. That war should have never been fought. It was U.S. foreign policy that decided they wanted to isolate Russia and to stop Russia from growing economically. It was a stupid idea then. It's stupid now. That war should end. And the Ukrainian people, there has to be, the West has to find a way to help make the Ukrainian people whole again. They have suffered immensely, and so have the Russian people. But remember, it was the U.S. that basically engineered a coup in Ukraine and attacked the Don and encouraged the attack on the Donbass, on Donetsk and Luhansk, where Russian-speaking people live, and started that war. So I'm opposed to war. I'm not opposed to defending our country, but I'm opposed to aggressive warfare, and that was another example of it. And I'm and the cost. You raised an issue a moment ago, Rick. Eisenhower said it. You know, every bomb that you drop, every war material that you buy, is food out of the mouths of your own people. And you know, we have hungry people in America. There's 42 million people who are not getting adequate food. And we have this luxury of funding wars and providing weapons everywhere. It's wrong. America must change its ways. In order to survive as a nation, we must change our ways. We must, you know, we must end this 56% of our discretionary budget going for war. We have to stop this idea of giving tax cuts to people who are already wealthy and forgetting the basic needs of the American people. I will tell you, you know, I look at the health of our people right now. Why don't we have a national health care? We should have had that years ago, and then you wouldn't have been in this mess where the government shuts down.
You know what's a real irony? That which you ask for, Mr. Congressman, they have in Ukraine. That which you just asked for Americans, they have in Israel. By the way, they have it in Russia. They have it in most countries. But it's ironic that in these countries where our taxpayers, your former constituents, are sending these countries billions or hundreds of billions or tens of billions of dollars, and their women, if they get pregnant, have all the rights. They have 8 weeks off, 16 weeks off, 15 weeks off, depending on the country. They have universal health care. Employees are guaranteed 4, 5, 3 weeks of vacation. None of those things exist in America. Am I crazy?
Well, Rick, what you just articulated helps to make the case that America needs a restructuring of our government. We need to return to the basic purposes that were outlined in the preamble of the Constitution. You know, provide, you know, promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. Or that we, the more poverty there is, the less freedom there is. You cannot have a political democracy without an economic democracy. And so we're seeing our basic rights impaired. We're seeing freedom of speech knocked down in universities. Universities are paying tribute now to Washington in order to be able to get federal dollars. And what does that mean? It means that they've shut down protests on campus. I remember back in the 60s, it was the campus, and 70s, it was campus protests which brought about the end to the Vietnam War. And the young people of our country, we need to look to, because they know when their future is being threatened. And their future is being threatened by war. Their future is being threatened by genocide. Their future is being threatened by limited job opportunities, by low wages, by lack of access to
housing.
Big one, housing. Yeah. Affordability. So go back to the purpose of our nation. It wasn't to be a military machine roaming about the world looking for dragons to slay. We were warned about that by our founders. It was to be able to provide a decent life for people. And so I go back to this. We need to restructure our government. We need to redefine what America is about. And we need to look at things, not only healthcare and education, but even our monetary policy. It's time, you know, we create, when we create money, we create more debt.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this for a long time. It's how I met my wife over monetary policy. It's time for America to put the Fed as a bureau under Treasury and to return the government to where it was more than 100 years ago, where it had the capability of being able to issue currency as it's needed and use taxation to pull off an overheated economy. We are right now in hock. We're in debt. Where people are slaves to debt. We need to change so that we have a country that that focuses on wealth creation for everyone. Huey Long said it years ago in a book. He was the governor of Louisiana and also a U.S. senator. He wrote a book called Every Man a King. There was even a song by that name. And he really understood that in order to, that a rising tide lifts all boats, and that we need to focus on lifting the standard of living today in America. And we can't do that if we keep splurging money around the world on wars, on arms sales, on giveaways. Rick, I'll tell you, having spent a lifetime in and around government, America needs to change its direction, needs to change its ways, or we're not going to survive as a country.
Yeah, from your mouth to God's ears. You're a good man. You really are, Dennis. Mr. Congressman, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking time to join us here and to deliver those words, which in many ways I find inspiring, because you're trying to lay out a plan for where we can go. And it's not about being a Democrat, and it's not about being a Republican. It's about finding the right solutions to get us out of this quagmire that we seem to be in right now. And it's a good sign. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Rick, it's wonderful to be with you, and I hope we can do this again. And, you know, I'm hopeful for America, but we need to break out of this attack on our Constitution, and we need to go back to fundamentals of free speech, of equal justice before the law, and of stopping the corruption which is riddling our government right now.
Yeah. You're a statesman, and you're a good American, and you're a good person, and I thank you. And I've always been a fan, and I'll continue to be a fan, and it'll be my pleasure. You're going to become a regular on this show, because from time to time, we need to have real good conversations between some old guys like us. Thank you, Dennis. God bless you.
Thanks. Thanks so much. Thanks. God bless you, too. Thank you.
You know, thousands of you have been commenting on our shows recently. You like these conversations, like the one I just had with Congressman Kucinich, for example. And you've been sending us a lot of comments. So I'll share a couple of them just so you know what people are saying. This is Dubai comments. He says, I'm from Odessa, Ukraine. And Ukraine is pressing on us these days ever more. They removed our mayor. They covered our Pushkin monument. They raid our clubs for playing Russian music. They arrest women for posting TCC videos. They want to scare us. Pure terrorists, he says. Thank you, sir. George says, I am so happy to see Rick enjoying his life and his job in Russia with his family without any pressure from those who tell him what to say. I'm really happy for Rick. Well, I'm happy for you for being happy for me. Ronnie Curie says, wow, Rick, this is a fantastic channel. Stumbled across it. Actually, now I'm subscribed. Your guests and yourself really get to the bottom of what's really happening with no gloss. The people need to know the truth. And that's what this channel is bringing. Keep it up. We will. We promise. And then finally, Robert Westhoff says, Western media shame themselves during their reporting of the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and reporting of the U.S. involvement in the destruction of Libya and Syria. But multiply that shame by 20 and you have some measure of what they did before and during the epic debacle in Ukraine. On the plus side, difficult to find, he says, parenthetically, their lying is advancing the pace to a multipolar world, which in turn will bring a more peaceful world. We hope so. We hope so, Mr. Westhoff. All right. Look, we love to hear your comments. We can't play them all because we get tens of thousands of them. But go to our YouTube channel. Go to Journalistically Speaking with Rick Sanchez. That's the name of the channel. And let us know what you think. Let me know what you like or what you don't like, by the way. It doesn't have to be positive. We're on Twitter, too, at Rick Sanchez TV. And we post a lot there, so we'll be looking forward to seeing your comments there as well. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks so much for being with us. Thank you for inviting us into your home, and we'll be looking for you next time.